Recorded live in downtown Newtown and points elsewhere, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Welcome everybody to season one. This is episode 16 of Rancho Notorious. I'm Dan Slevin, and once again I'm alone in the studio this morning. Kaylee Carruthers is in Vancouver, Canada, calling. Kaylee.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning. What time is it with you at the moment?
It's quarter after 11 in the morning.
Oh, okay, so it is a morning as well. So well, that's weird. And does that make it a Wednesday for you?
Yeah, we are.
To think about that for a moment. It is. it is. That's like 22 hours. No, 20 hours ahead. We are. The world and time and things like science are completely bewildering me at this time of the morning. It's 7:15 here in Wellington, New Zealand, and I'm staring out the Rancho Notorious window at the hills of Newtown and a beautiful blue sky. It looks like we're going to have spring, a genuine still spring day, which is... you know, we've sort of had on alternate days here. What's are you in fall in Vancouver?
Yes, I am.
And what does that mean? Does that mean you have to dress for all seasons, or how does that work in Canada?
It's been really warm, so it's t-shirt weather here, so it's not too bad. It makes it a bit difficult to go into the cinema, but you know, it's nice.
Have they discovered air conditioning? It's this new thing that's been invented.
Yeah,
you know, they're allowed to warm it on a cold day and chill it on a hot day. It's quite cool.
Yeah. They haven't really. It seems like the temperature outside and in the theater seems to be about the same at all the venues I'm going to. So that's bizarre. I don't know what's going on. Maybe they set it like yearly to just like start like heating a little bit. But, you know, they haven't adjusted for actually warm weather outside.
I once went on a train ride, one of those overnight train rides from Wellington to Auckland, which is, I can't remember what it was called, the Silver Fern. Well, no, the Silver Fern was the daytime one. Anyway, it was the overnight one. And they just turned all the heating on when we got to the Central Plateau, which is like 10 o'clock at night. So you were freezing cold until you got to sort of Ruapehu area. Then they turned all the heating on, but they also it was 10 o'clock at night, so they turned all the lights off and expected you to just go to sleep. there was no gentle sort of fade between them. There was no sense of sort of air conditioning or anything like that. It was like you were in a school dormitory or something. It was very strange. Anyway, we should get on with the show, shouldn't we? On today's program, Kaylee is going to try and describe to us the wonders that can be found in the Vancouver Film Festival. We are going to review together the fun-packed animation of The Box Trolls and the Swedish punk kids in We Are the Best. All of that, plus, you know, the usual news, stats, and opinion. But Kaylee, first of all, you've been monitoring the mailbag.
Yes, I have. And it looks like there was a war on puns that broke out after last week's show. Starting with Darren Bevan, also known as GeekBoy73 on Twitter, who said, "How dare you diss those who use amazing puns for Maze Runner?" To which Liam retweeted, or Liam McGurn responded, "I regret nothing." And this just went on and on.
And yeah, there was a good discussion about puns. How are you on, where do you sit on the pun fence?
I enjoy puns, but I enjoy them when they're used appropriately, like Two Word Review, good use of puns. News headline, that's an abuse of the pun. So, yeah.
Noted for future reference. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, not referring to any publication in particular in New Zealand, but there's a time and a place for puns, and I think Rancho Notorious is that it's an open forum where puns are welcome. So
I think it's all welcome as long as it works. You know, that's basically my rule.
Yeah, as long as no one gets hurt. And we also have a lovely collection of Gone Girl two-word reviews, so I'll jump into those as well. Tin Ribs 27, two-word review for Gone Girl, marital mayhem, lurid, hilarious depravity like a film Hitchcock would have made were he still around.
Mm. And lots of people have been to see Gone Girl. It seems to be the amongst the people that I pay attention to, the one essential film of the year, really. Didn't even require very much encouragement to go, but lots of people going, lots of people having opinions about it, lots of people discussing it, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Fred Thompson's two-word review for Gone Girl, morbid and misanthropic, deeply cynical, darkly funny, superb casting, just a teeny-weeny bit long. And also Fred Thompson, he always gives us these two-word reviews every week. It's so good.
Yeah, but not only that, but he also gives us a little explanation as well, just in case we're not quite bright enough to get the references.
Two-word review for Dracula Untold, Batman Begins, flawed but entertaining reimagining, solid action fantasy.
Yeah, not one that I've seen as yet. In fact, at the rate that these things are coming and going, it may not be on my radar until the home video release.
And one more Gone Girl two-word review from, what was that? It was just a general review, actually, not two words, from Barnaby HM. I saw Gone Girl, dark, funny, and oddly familiar. Have we all been these people sometimes? Two words for Rancho Podcast, she's amazing.
That would be a bit depressing if we had all been those people at some point, but your mileage may vary, as the saying goes.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good summary of our mailbag for this
Excellent.
Week.
Thank you very much, everybody, for getting in touch with us. Thank you very much, everybody, for paying attention. What have people been watching? We're going to scan the world for box office top fives, starting with New Zealand.
Indeed. So in at number five, up from six, The Box Trolls, which we'll be reviewing shortly. Opening at number four, Dracula Untold. In the number three position, down from two, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Opening in the number two position is Gone Girl, and staying in the number one position, The Maze Runner.
Maze Runner,
it would still be there.
Maze Runner holding its own, definitely. Across the Ditch in Australia, down one place at number five, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And straight in at number four, Annabelle, the horror film. This is the latest film in some franchise or other. I forget which one. It's not the Paranormal Activity one. It's the other one. Anyway, not out in New Zealand.
It's about a haunted doll.
A haunted doll. Yeah, another. It's a genre all to its own, isn't it? But it is definitely part of a franchise. I just forget which one at the moment. I could look it up, couldn't I? It seems I'm staring at a computer that has access to all of the information of the world. I'll look that up and come back to you. Also straight in at number three, Dracula Untold, which is not part of a franchise, but is sort of another mining of Universal's back catalogue in that way. The Maze Runner drops. No, it goes up one place from three to two in Australia. And number one in Australia is Gone Girl with $5 million Australian bucks.
Mm-hmm. In the US, in number five is The Maze Runner after 3 weeks at the box office. Number four, The Box Trolls. Number three, The Equalizer. Number two, Annabelle. And in the number one position is Gone Girl. And it opened this week, so right in at number one.
Right, and just at about the time that we were arriving in the studio, he said trying to do two things at once while he's looking up Annabelle. Oh, come on, tell. Oh, that's right. Is it The Conjuring? Is it a prequel to
yes.
To that?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Right. Oh, good. So I'm glad we got that sorted out, because I hate it when people like Reese Pie tweet us, let me Google that for you. when we don't know stuff, when we should be the fountain of all cinematic knowledge here. And I apologize for those occasions when we just go, I don't know. Anyway, so the UK, the weekend box office last weekend has just been released. Number 5, What We Did on Our Holiday. Number 4, The Box Trolls. 3, The Equalizer. 2, Dracula Untold. And number 1 is Gone Girl. So Billy Elliot the Musical, which was number 1 last week, dropping well down because limited screenings for that sort of alternative content stuff. Anything else there that's interesting? Sex Tape still in the top 15. huge business internationally. No business. Well, huge business in the UK, basically, but nothing anywhere else. Anything else that's interesting? Not really. Although, interestingly, the stats for the UK box office come from the British Film Institute, not from any other website. And so once they get past the top 15, they like to highlight the box office performance for other UK films. So you get a really good sense of what the UK productions are that are currently in release. Interestingly, at number 99 on the UK box office last weekend, Stephen Fry Live, More Fool Me 2014 book tour, distributed by Picture House Entertainment. It's at number 99 and it made £27.
There you go.
£27 at the box office. I'm not prepared to Google that now to work out why, but maybe Reese Pie can tell me why that would even be in the box office schedule. Anyway, time for us to talk a little bit about what you've been up to over the last 2 weeks, really, because you took a week off last week.
Yeah, sorry. I unexpectedly had to take a week off because of the move. There wasn't going to be any internet, so.
Yeah, you were helping family move from the burbs to closer to town in Vancouver. Is that right?
Yeah, moving from the big burbs to the big city. So now I am back, actually in Vancouver. It's been good. So I've been able to catch this is the final weekend coming up of the Vancouver International Film Festival. So I've been able to jump in for the last week and see a couple of films, which has been wonderful.
Is it a 2 week festival or a 2.5 week festival like New Zealand?
It's a 2 week festival plus 4 days of extra screenings.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Yep. So the extra screenings go until next Monday. So those start. They start in the TBA slots that are sort of peppered around the schedule, and then they sort of fill up after Friday's the closing night, and then Saturday, Sunday, Monday there's extra screening. So an extra three days.
Wow! And there's a certain amount of crossover with Toronto, of course, but they're not organised by the same people. It's not like New Zealand where we have one festival organisation that covers the entire country and puts on multiple different events. So Toronto being the biggest, essentially the biggest film festival in the world, I mean, how does Vancouver sell itself? Does it have a speciality? Does it have... What's its pitch?
I'm not really sure what its pitch is. the reason I really enjoy the Vancouver Film Festival is they highlight talent from the province. They do a lot of promotion of the local filmmakers, British Columbia filmmakers, and Canadian talent as well. So it's really a great festival for fostering local talent, but also international talent as well. I've been surprised going to a couple of the screenings and the director is there. The international directors are there, short filmmakers are there, although it's not announced anywhere in the program or when I bought my ticket. So it's sort of like, oh, cool, that's great. I'm glad someone's here. Like, what am I good to know? But because I lived in Vancouver and went to school in Vancouver, I feel it's sort of like my home festival. So I have a little bit of extra love for it. Because it is on the big international festival scale, it is getting sort of at the end, even though festivals go all year round. There is a lot of crossover with TIFF, with Telluride, and with New Zealand. Actually, there's a lot of titles here that are that played at the New Zealand International Film Festival.
Yeah, because so. It seems to me that there are like two waves. There's the Europe to US, or the Europe to the rest of the world wave that starts at Cannes, which New Zealand takes advantage of, and then there's a second wave that starts at that sort of Telluride Toronto point of view, which sort of gets that North America, then pushes out to the rest of the world, and eventually, so there's sort of, it's like, yeah, two waves going around the world in different directions, and we're kind of lucky in New Zealand in that we sort of catch both of those waves at different times.
Yeah, and there's also quite a few world premieres that happen at the Abu Dhabi International Film Festival, where Ian goes. So there's also that sort of funny.
That's Ian, your partner, right? Just in case people, you know, think we're just talking to ourselves on the telephone, and not paying any attention to the listeners. So that's Ian, your partner, who works at. In film technology, film screening technology, as an installer and a maintainer of this sort of stuff. And he goes to Abu Dhabi every year to be sort of technical supervisor there, is that right?
Well, yeah, it changes every year. I think his role is usually some sort of technical advisor, technical supervisor, and then just a whole bunch of things get piled in as well. So it's a sort of like mélange technical job that he gets to do over there.
Just helping people with the context there. But yeah, you're right that festivals all over the world are trying to find their make their own mark, and it's getting to a point where the owners of films are desperate to try and make a splash of any kind, really. So you have Sundance as a launch pad. You have South by Southwest as a launch pad. Cannes, Venice, the Telluride, and I guess from a regional point of view, Abu Dhabi would be the main one in the Middle East, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's Abu Dhabi and then there's Dubai as well, and I think Dubai has been going a little bit longer.
Well, there you go.
I think Abu Dhabi sort of broke off of Dubai. But yeah, those are also large festivals as well.
Let's get back to Vancouver and what you've actually managed to see. We talked to Jonathan King a couple of weeks ago about Fantastic Fest and asked him what he'd seen. It turns out most of what he'd seen were films that he'd missed while they were on in New Zealand. And it was like, oh, I really wanted to see that. I'll go and see that one. Did you do the same thing? Were you looking to fill some gaps?
I was looking to fill some gaps, but a lot of the sort of bigger titles that I wanted to see played in the first week, and so I missed them. The scheduling I have found was quite interesting this year for Vancouver Film Festivals. All their sort of bigger titles were in the first week, and the second week is sort of this weird like trickle down. but I've been able to get tickets to most of the things I've wanted to see. Only like one or two were sold out, so that was good. The first film that I saw that I really want to talk about was Above Us All by Eugenie Jansen from the Netherlands. Sorry, she's not from the Netherlands, but the film is a Netherlands-Belgian co-production. And it was a 3D HFR film. It was shot at 50 frames per second.
Whoa.
In 3D. Yep. And it's about a young half-Aboriginal, half-Belgian girl whose mother passes away. And so she moves back to Belgium with her father and her brother. And the film is made up of 52 or 53 360-degree pans in HFR 3D, these like slow, beautiful pans. And so it's these snippets of time, but it's like nothing. But yeah, it was so good. It was exactly like the first thing I needed to see to really get a festival fix was this beautiful 3D HFR film.
Just remind me what it's called again.
Above Us All.
Above Us All. He's writing that down for future reference, because that one's going on the wish list.
Yeah, so it's just this, and it was a beautiful blending of the Aboriginal culture and, you know, the Belgium culture and how we deal with loss and, you know, how we move on in our lives, and also a completely, you know, new, at least new to me, way to tell a story. And it was great because the director was there, so she got to talk about the film, and, you know, it was her, an experiment in how to portray time in a very different way. And so it was a beautiful film. Unfortunately, with the type of 3D they had, it was a bit muddy, like you lost a lot of the color. But she acknowledged that, because it was a very special setup to get this played at the festival. But it was awesome.
Sorry, 50 frames HFR. Like, you perhaps we should be asking Ian this, but you would know, I bet. Like, The Hobbit was 48, yes. When that came out, does that mean that those venues that had HFR installed had the firmware update or had the projectors that were able to do it? Are they able to sort of like select? Are they able to play any frame rate up to a certain point? Does that mean that, you know, if you supplied a 50 frame file or something, they would just go, "Yep, we can do that"? Or does it have to have yet another firmware update to allow it to play at that slightly unusual rate?
I think I had a conversation with Ian about the 60 frames per second, and I think it does include another software update. But because the Vancouver Film Festival has Christie as a sponsor, I'm guessing there was, you know, some sort of help involved with that.
Okay, yeah, they could pretty much do whatever they want, yeah.
Yeah, it's Christie and Dolby are the sponsors, so I'm sure Dolby was able to help them out with it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about whether that film will, you know, how many places in the world that film will be able to play. I mean, it's thanks to Peter Jackson that it could play anywhere at all, really, you know, because The Hobbit encouraged all of those upgrades. But I'm wondering if certainly at Wellington at the Embassy, whether that has the 60 frame and below capability. We wait and see.
Mm-hmm. I also saw a collection of short films, which included, I'm just going to flip through my book, which included the newest short from New Zealand director Alex Duncan called The Tidekeeper, which was beautiful. It was recommended to me that I go and watch this short film, and I'm so glad I did, because the collection of short films was wonderful. Except for one, there was one that I hated and I thought was super tasteless, but the rest were great. The short film collection was I'm Having a Good Day, I'm Not Having a Good Day, and included shorts from Australia, Albania, Italy, Germany, the US, the UK, and of course New Zealand from Alex Duncan. So yeah, the official synopsis for The Tidekeeper was, one night an old seaman dreams a storm into his bed, but who knows how to stem the tide. And if you get a chance to see this, do see it. It's really lovely. The couple sitting beside me in the theater after the short ended did one of those, oh, okay. I just want to reach over and like smack them and be like, it was amazing.
And what was the film that that didn't work for you in that program?
The film that didn't work for me at all was Sophie by Alex Lombard. She's an actress. I thought this was made by a male when I first saw it, but it's actually made by a female. I just thought it was really, really tasteless. And it was also the. I don't know how they decided what order these shorts would run in, but the fact that they had Sophie, which is about child molestation, doubled up with another one called Penance, which was quite good, but also dealt with the same subject. I was like, that wasn't great programming. Like, and in the write-up in the program, it's in a different order, and I'm not. I guess it's they list them in alphabetical order, but they play them in, I guess, some other order.
Oh, that's not helpful.
Yeah, I read up about the short film. It's like made by this actress and it's won Best Actress awards. And I was like, I was just, ugh, yuck.
Was Alex was Alex in attendance? Was she a guest?
No, she wasn't. There was just one director, Martin Wallner, who directed a really lovely short film about two elderly women who are sort of at odds with each other, sharing this hospital room, but sort of come together and make friends. That's a terrible way to describe it because it was a great short film. He was there, and it was a daytime screening I went to.
Right.
And so most people left. He was there for the Q&A, and most people left. I was like, well, I don't want to leave the Q&A because I don't have anywhere to rush off to. And it's like this one guy, he's here from overseas. So it's like they ask if there's any questions, and I just look around. And I was like, okay, well, I'll just be that first person who asks a question.
Well, that's the Rancho Notorious flag that you're flying there. Well done.
Yeah, so that was in regards to my tweet of like, you know, I'm getting really good at breaking those awkward silences because that's what I do in New Zealand as well. It's like if there's a director, I will often go and watch the film. If I've already seen the film, I'll go sit in the audience and make sure that at least there's someone to ask the first question because it's just so awkward. It's like, you know, it's like talking through some. It's like using your phone through someone's film or talking through someone's film. It's like someone came here and they're guests. Like, just ask anything. Like, don't make them feel weird.
But don't do that awful thing where you start off by saying, "Well, my question isn't really a question. It's more of a statement." And then just talk.
Oh, gosh.
And then just talk for a while.
Those people are the worst.
So what else have you been to?
And the other film I've been to, so I've only been to three so far. I hit my stride. Tomorrow I have four films I'm going to tomorrow. I also saw the new film from, hold on, let me find it. Where did it go? The new film from Christian Petzold, starring Nina Hoss, called Phoenix.
So envious about that. Really, really wanted to see that. Barbara was their most recent collaboration from 2012, which was a real slow burner.
And you saw the director at Telluride, didn't you?
I did, yes. And he is a lovely, lovely guy, really interesting guy to talk to and listen to. And Barbara was one of those films that I think it had actually played in Wellington before I got to Telluride, but I missed it. And so that was a classic one of sort of catching up on something that I'd missed. A terrific film, got a surprising cinema release in New Zealand for such a small and, I guess, unglamorous film. But it did get an audience, and I hope that means that the collaborations between these two, this director and this actor, mean that Phoenix is going to get a good release here in New Zealand again.
This film is incredible. I cannot recommend it enough. It was just so good, and it stuck with me. Like, you know, the film finished. It was really beautiful. I was walking down the stairs out of the cinema, and I was just like, trying to stem the emotions because it's just so beautiful. Such a great story. So well delivered. So I cannot recommend this enough. If you can find a way to see it on the big screen, please do, because it is so beautiful and it's so well told and so well acted.
What's it about?
It is about, so Nina Hoss plays a World War II survivor. She survives the camps because she is turned in as a Jewess and taken away, and she has reconstructive surgery because she has such, you know, such bad facial wounds, and asks to have her face recreated as it once was, but of course it's not exactly the way she wanted it. And it's brilliant because you don't see her face until it's revealed after the surgery. So they don't need to give her prosthetics. It's like she just has some bruising post-surgery, and all the photos of her before, she's always obscured by her hair. So they get around the whole having to, you know, make her look different. Mm-hmm. So it's quite good. But she goes to find her husband, who is convinced that she had died, and he doesn't recognize her, and he decides, because she looks so much like his dead wife, he decides to enlist her to help basically steal his wife's inheritance because her whole family has passed away. And yeah, so it's I wouldn't say a psychological thriller, but it has definitely these like psychological elements of this, you know, she thinks was this doting husband who's actually this really skeezy, like dirtbag who's trying to steal her money because he thinks she's dead, but she's actually been right in front of him and staying in the same house, training to be more like she once was. Oh, so it's, yeah, so good.
Great. Can't wait for that one. On the list, you said you got four for tomorrow. What are you looking forward to most out of that four?
Oh, I'm actually doing a triple feature that I'm really looking forward to. The Altered States program, which is the sort of fringe, sort of like the Incredibly Strange. I'm doing two. Sorry, I'm just. Oh, there we go. Sorry, I'm not the wrong day. So I'm really looking forward to The Infinite Man, which is about a part of the Altered States program, but a young man who decides he wants to go back in time to, I think, win the heart of this beautiful girl and ends up being stuck in a time loop. And the other one is A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is an Iranian vampire film.
Whoa. In black. Stop it.
Yeah.
Get out of town.
I'm pretty excited about those two films. And then, the other two, I can never remember what they're about. Heaven Knows What, which I'm seeing in the early afternoon, is a sort of a drama documentary combo about a woman who plays a slightly fictionalized version of herself who is a drug addict. So it's there's scripted scenes featuring real drug dealers and people in the neighborhood.
I read about this is playing in, I think it was playing the New York Film Festival at this around about the same time. I think this is the one, and one of the actors is actually in jail at the moment for dealing drugs, and you know all these actors were all sort of plucked from the streets.
And then on Friday, I'm looking forward to seeing the closing night film, which is Whiplash, which I've heard a lot about for several months now. So I was like, oh, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go see it. I know it's probably going to come out in cinemas, but I'm just going to go see it. And that one, people don't know.
That launched at Sundance earlier on this year, and it was the one that had the biggest sort of buzz out of Sundance, I think. And that's the jazz drumming movie, right?
Yeah, which stars J.K. Simmons, who can pretty much do no wrong, and Miles Teller,
who has done a lot of wrong, has done a lot of wrong in his career, but is starting to make up for it now.
So I'm excited to see that one. Yeah, but J.K. Simmons plays a jazz drummer instructor who takes tough love to extremes, as I'm quoting the note. Miles Teller is his student, and I guess he wants to learn how to play the drums. And it's just I haven't looked up much beyond that. I've just heard all the buzz, so that's why I'm going to it.
All right. Well, let's move on now and talk about films that people can see right now rather than films that they might be able to see a little bit later on.
I want every box troll gone.
Let's go!
Box troll, come out!
No more hiding, right?
Right!
I will destroy every last box troll in this town!
Never seen one do that before.
That is The Box Trolls, the new film from the studio Laika, who specialize in stop motion animation. It's not claymation, is it? Because they don't use plasticine like the Wallace and Gromit films, but it's stop motion animation, quite extraordinary attention to detail and effort and work goes into these films, and it doesn't take very long before you completely forget the process. Like you just stop worrying about how they've done it. It's just a great story, right?
Oh my gosh, I just. I saw this last night and I tweeted you, and I was like, oh my god, that was the best. That was so good.
You know, I've been a big fan of these guys' work since Coraline, I think was one of theirs, and Paranorman a couple of years ago raised the bar again in terms of script, story, and humor, and this the Box Trolls is just it's another step up yet again on quality of of storytelling, of script, of vocal performance. It just does everything so well. This is carry on.
The animation is so well done, like technically so well done, so smooth. I was like, did they have like digital like intermediate frames? But no, it's all done by hand. It's just, it's so good. I don't even know what to say about it.
It's the story is about fictional sort of fairy tale town that is obsessed by cheese. They are cheese makers and cheese eaters. And at the beginning of the film, we see the box trolls, who are trolls who wear boxes as their clothing. They come out at night and go through the garbage basically, and look for useful things that people have left behind. They're like wombles. But at the beginning of the film, they're taking a baby away with them. So, oh my goodness, what's going on here? And a hero arrives to supposedly save the town, Archibald Snatcher, who, with his henchman, offers a little bit like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, offers to rid the town of the box trolls who may intend to steal and eat all of their children. He imposes a curfew so that after dark nobody is allowed out, and so at night basically it's Snatcher and his henchmen going out looking for these box trolls and snatching them away. We find out that the baby has grown up, not grown up fully, but has become a little boy known as Eggs, because he thinks that he's a box troll, and he wears a carton, an egg box, and he discovers that basically, he's not a troll like the rest of them, and that he is in fact a human being, but doesn't really know how to fit himself back into society. I'm not telling this story very well at all, am I? You can help me out here.
I don't want to spoil it. Like, you know, it's a great adventure. It's definitely for all ages. It's hilarious. Not, you know, focus on the animation, not the voice cast, but the voice cast was so good. So good. They're so well cast. And I was able to pick out the henchmen and the father character who we get snippets of. I was able to pick those out right away. But the whole movie, I was just trying to figure out who was the voice of Archibald Snatcher. And I was just like, I thought I had it. And I was like, oh, no, I don't think David Walliams, like, it's quite there. I was like, oh, it sounds so familiar. And, you know, we took the Mickey out of Ben Kingsley for his portrayal in Ender's Game. But, man, can this guy do voices? Like,
yeah, I know, and there's a clip on YouTube of an outtake from Iron Man 3, where Ben Kingsley, who's of course playing an actor playing a villain in that film, gets asked by the hero characters to do various different accents, and he's just amazing. He's amazing. He's always been a really, really gifted mimic. You can find stuff of Ben Kingsley online where he's doing impersonations of people like Anthony Hopkins and what have you at award ceremonies, and he is very, very funny. This voice is because I was also trying to pick it all the way through. This is his impersonation of Michael Gambon, and it's like, well, it sounds a lot like Michael Gambon, but then it's not quite. And also, Michael Gambon's really old now. Why would he be doing that? Anyway, it's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's a brilliant performance. It's very, very funny. But yeah, it's very, very distinctive. The henchmen are particularly good as well. I really liked Richard Ayoade as Mr. Pickles. That is a voice that that I picked quite early on, and very, very funny. Nick Frost is in there as well. Tracy Morgan was an interesting piece of casting as one of the henchmen. Not too much in the way of sort of stunt casting. After that, lots of like the box trolls themselves are really sort of, they make noise rather than speak. So sort of
there's
voice
some
artists,
sort of Gollum voices in there too.
Yeah, a little bit of Gollum-y stuff going on. Look, this is, you're absolutely right in terms of saying that it's for all ages. We took the 11-year-old to it on Sunday afternoon, and he was sort of on the edge of his seat all the way through and just laughing, because it's got lots of really gross gags that little boys will appreciate. It's got the great character work that adults will appreciate. There's and it's a really good story too, and well told. It doesn't muck about. And this is, you know, I know people say this about films all the time, but you really should stay all the way through the credits. Because,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, the best post-credit scene that I've seen in a very, very long time. Very much worth waiting around for. And I won't spoil it by telling you what we're likely to get. But seriously, this is.
It does involve Richard Ayoade, and I think it was just him, just like.
Just riffing. And we're coming to the end of the school holidays here in New Zealand, and I really regret not going to see Box Trolls earlier. It, for some reason, it didn't seem like, I don't know, it didn't seem like it was going to be as good as it was, and so I ended up choosing other things first. And you know,
I think that's because the marketing for it has been around. That's what I was thinking, but the marketing around it has been around so long. But the stills, because I'm thinking of the display that's up at readings,
yeah,
like in those windows. It's like it doesn't really showcase what the film looks like. You know, it looks like another digitally animated feature that sort of looks like it's based on clay characters.
Yeah,
but it's not at all. It's this absolutely beautiful, like stunningly designed, like wonderfully made stop motion animation film.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. So I think that a trick or two has been missed here, particularly in terms of school holidays, because I think the word's only starting to really get out now about how good it is compared to. I mean, I just really pity all the kids who and the parents who ended up going along to see the new Planes movie just because it was Disney, when they could have been going to see the Box Trolls next door and actually having a really good time. So. Yeah, that's a bit of a disappointment. And my final observation about it is that, and this is a big surprise to me, is that I was looking to see whether, because it's a 3D release as well as a 2D release, but certainly here in Wellington, I don't know about Auckland, and I certainly don't know about Vancouver, but there were very, very few 3D screenings of it here in Wellington. Only a couple of cinemas actually had 3D screenings, and they were all early in the day. So almost as if...
The cinemas here in Vancouver that are playing it... there's only one screen at all the cinemas it's playing at. They only have one per day that's in 2D. So it's mostly 3D here.
Right. That's interesting. I just wonder whether the edge or the gloss has been taken off 3D, particularly when it comes to kids and parents and school holidays, and you know, the fact that it costs so much extra. Maybe there was just this sense of, well, let's just have lots of 2D screenings and not worry about turning people off because of the price.
It's so good.
I know. Well, I'm still talking about it. We're still promoting it and talking it up. And I really hope that lots of people, find out about it. I just realised that we're supposed to finish off with two words, and I don't have mine yet. So I'm going to ask you to go first.
My two words for the Box Trolls are absolutely delightful.
Oh, that's good. I concur with that. I would
that's
say
a good job for you.
Yes.
I concur.
Excellent. Good. Out of jail. All right. This is the moment where we see whether the new sting works.
Oh, nice. After hints have been dropped for some weeks, David Lynch and Mark Frost, along with Showtime, are bringing back Twin Peaks to television, nearly 25 years after the series first aired. The new series will be a continuation of the story set in present day. Twitter, tell us how you feel about it, because I have my feelings.
Oh.
And I just, I don't know.
How do you feel? Did you see it when it first came out? You're surely too young to have seen it when it first came out.
Yeah, no, I was too young to see it when it first came out. When I was in film school, I tried to watch it, but couldn't quite get into it. So I actually watched it earlier this year, last year. It was the first time I actually sat down and watched the whole thing. And it is creepy and scary, but also kind of great and very, very much like you put something I would expect from David Lynch. But I want to keep it the way it is, you know? It's like he already had to settle and make that made-for-TV film for the U.S. because, you know, people couldn't handle it just sort of being a cliffhanger. So, which I haven't watched Fire Walk With Me because I want to be a purist and, like, an elitist, I guess, about it. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't feel good about this coming back.
I watched it when it first came out on television here in New Zealand. TV3 played it. It was one of their first really big sort of statement shows.
And I remember hearing about the ad campaign for it.
Oh my God. Yeah. How yeah. Horrible. It was huge. It was really high profile. And in those days when there was only three channels and I don't even think Sky was around. So there was not much television to choose from. It was at my flat appointment viewing. It was, we invited people around for it, you know, and if you weren't watching Twin Peaks, then you were simply not part of the conversation. And but of course we weren't able to binge watch this, you know. You couldn't watch five episodes in a weekend or whatever. You had to wait every week and talk about what had happened in the intervening days and build up tension that way. And it just all this talk of Twin Peaks has just reminded me of all this that stuff that we miss now, with the fact that we'd heard about Twin Peaks for weeks before it, months even before it actually came out here, but nobody, of course, had any opportunity to see it. There was no piracy, and there was no sending VHSs from around the world so that some people could see it early. It was a different time, and I just wonder whether that nostalgia for the show and for the time that it came out needs to be tampered with, you know. A little bit like you, is like, really? Is there anything more that we need to know about these people that's not going to spoil what we already know?
Mm.
Anyway. Mm-hmm. But anyway, not till 2016, so still lots of time to discuss it. And of course, the nature of the internet being what it is, there's going to be 2 years worth of spoilers coming out. There's going to be photos from the set. There's going to be tweets. If you think about what, you know, all of the hints we're getting about the new Star Wars films, I mean, the Twin Peaks is going to be exactly the same. And it's kind of, I would love to have that sort of excitement about something new rather than the, you know, the return to something old.
Mm-hmm. Last week, you guys talked about the fact that Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon sequel was going to appear simultaneously on IMAX and Netflix. This week, the video streaming company announced it has made a deal with Adam Sandler's Happy Madison Productions to finance and produce four feature films over the next 4 years. But the new twist is that these films will only be available to Netflix subscribers in the 50 countries in which they operate. So no theatrical releases are planned, which means little old New Zealand, traditionally a supporter of Sandler's work, misses out. Honestly, yeah. I think this is great news. I'm sorry. I think this is good. Stay on Netflix.
It is kind of great news for cinephiles, but not for Sony, who have been releasing Sandler's films for donkey's years here in New Zealand and always made us a steady coin from them. They've always been a really reliable source of income, and I don't know whether this means that it's exclusive, whether, you know, or whether he's just going to make two crappy films a year instead of one crappy film a year. Maybe that's how it's going to work. So maybe we'll the cinema goers of New Zealand will still get their Adam Sandler fix.
Fan vad ett punkin är död, han inte fattat det än.
Grabbar,
titta här.
Snyggaste brudarna i stan. Fan vad kåt jag blir.
Jag ska bara att börja brinna att de dog allå.
Men du, vi vill fortfarande ha ett sånt riktigt.
All right, we are the best. Kaylee, this was the program launch film for the New Zealand Film Festival in Wellington, and I think in Auckland as well. So lots of us got a chance to see it before the festival, and it was really well chosen because as a film to get you in the mood for movies, there's almost nothing better, right?
So good. Yeah, the latest film from Lukas Moodysson, which is about three girls in 1980s Stockholm who, despite having no musical talents, decide they want to form a punk band because they're young and they're punk and they totally, like, are down with a man. And it is so infectious and so funny. And it just totally makes you feel like an indestructible kid, you know. It just takes you back to your childhood when you're like, yeah, I'm like super cool and I can do what I want and I can be in this cool punk band and like spike my hair and cut my own hair and like do what I want. So I'm so glad that this is getting, I'm not sure, is it a large release or a fairly small release?
No, I think it would be fairly niche, I would say. I haven't looked outside of Wellington. I was just looking for screenings around Wellington, but yeah, not a huge wide release, but probably, you know, worth seeking out wherever you may find it.
Yeah, so I'm definitely glad to see this back on cinema screen. So if you missed it at the film festival, because it did travel fairly wide as the festival moved around the country, do go see this. It's a great film. Good date night, you know, get a beer and just be like, yeah. It's like, because coming out of this, I just felt so good and like so uplifted and so happy. It's just so good. And
were you a punk?
You'll want to start a punk band.
Were you a punk when you were 13? Did you spike your hair? Were you rebellious? Did you learn to play a musical instrument badly?
No. I grew up in sort of the Britney Spears NSYNC generation, so I was very much and still am into pop music. So I'm sort of a bit uncool in that way. But my brother, I wanted to like punk music because my older brother liked punk music, but I've never really gotten into it.
The music's awful. Like punk music is like you have to search. The few and far between are the really good punk songs that you'd want to listen to over and over again. But as being part of a scene, you know, and as part of a movement and as a transformation of a culture from a top-down corporate in-sync-y Justin Timberlake, Britney Spears culture to a bottom-up, let's make it ourselves, let's just do whatever we want, let's express ourselves and, you know, in whether we can play our instruments or not. Punk was amazing. It changed everything, and yet, you look at I've actually got a book here which came out about 20 years ago, and it's a sort of survey of British pop music from the pop music scene from the 70s and 80s, and it's actually called Like Punk Never Happened, and because basically it's about, you know, from 77 to sort of 82, New Wave and Elvis Costello and the Damned and the Sex Pistols and all that sort of stuff and breaking down the barriers, etc. But by 1982 we were back to Spandau Ballet and Culture Club and prissy makeup wearing manufactured pop stars, and so maybe nothing actually did change in the end. Maybe it is just pure nostalgia, but I'm sure for the people who are actually involved in it, it changed their lives. And I know that I was reading an article online, which I'll put a link to in the show notes from the New Zealand website Audio Culture, which is a fantastic resource as a kind of online history of New Zealand popular music. And there's a great article about Wellington alternative music magazines in the early 80s, including I think it was called Inside Out, maybe. I'm not sure. I'll put a link there, but there's a whole lot of stuff in there about the Wellington punk scene and the Wellington new wave scene, and people falling in love with the music of Joy Division and having it change their lives, and what happened when the Cure came to town and all that sort of stuff. And so maybe for the individuals involved, it really was absolutely life changing. But the culture itself probably hasn't changed as much as we would hope. Sorry, that was a mad rave on my part. I'll let you talk.
I think that's good. That's good.
I didn't realize this until yesterday, actually, that We Are the Best! Exclamation mark, very important, is actually adapted from Lucas Moodysson's wife's graphic novel. Did you know that?
I did know that.
Oh, okay.
I haven't read the graphic novel. I knew it after I had seen the film. So.
Right. Yeah,
I'm
very interested to see what that would be like, because it just feels sort of semi-improvised, doesn't it? It's got that sort of flavor about it that it's like a fly on the wall documentary, not a storyboarded story like a comic book or a graphic novel would be. Anyway, look, We Are the Best. Just so much fun. And in fact, that's going to be my two-word review for We Are the Best. It'll be much fun.
I think my two-word review for We Are the Best is punk rocks.
Oh, look, you're better at this than I am. This is why I really need to work so much harder and do so much more preparation. That was
where you got those long rants. It gives me time to think about these.
Yeah, okay, so I'm playing my part, I know. That is our show for this week. Next week, I've no idea what we're going to have on the show, but no doubt it will be as much fun as the show you just listened to. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, where you'll find a way to communicate with us via email or make a comment.
You can follow us on Twitter via at Rancho Podcast. It's RANCHO Podcast, all one word, where we will be tweeting about things we think are interesting and retweeting your reviews every once in a while when we remember to do it as well. And you can interact with us on Letterboxd. Our username is Rancho Notorious.
And you can subscribe to us. If you don't want all of the show notes and all of that sort of stuff, which you can find on the web version, you can just subscribe to the podcast only feed at iTunes, and then it'll automatically arrive on your iDevice. If you're an Android
sort of
user,
like that YouTube album, but way better.
Yeah, that's right. And if you've an Android user, then you will be able to find us at all of the usual places that you can find podcasts. The show is a Funerals and Snakes production, season one. How long is season one, by the way? Did you say 16 or 18?
I think I said 18.
Okay, 18. Season one is going to be 18 episodes in length, completely arbitrary number. It's executive produced by Robert Catto, Random Films, Claire Quiray, Mark Cuby, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson, and Matthew Buchanan. The theme music is Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Los Plantronics. You can buy that at the iTunes store, which is where I found it. And we're going to play you out with some more music from the closing credits of The Box Trolls. The one, like, I would almost delete half a star for The Box Trolls for the terrible cover of Little Boxes, which is played over the closing credits. But so we're not going to play that, but it's another track by the same group. They're called Loch Lomond. The song is called Some Kids. That's playing either now or shortly. I'm going to edit that in later on. Special thanks to my partner Karen, who makes sure that everyone who visits us here at Rancho Notorious is well fed, well watered, and well looked after. Thanks very much to Kaylee in Canada. Thanks to you all for listening. That's good morning from me, Dan Slevin.
And good afternoon from me, Kaylee Carruthers.